Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Late Show Pod Show listeners can get 20% off on all Late Show with Stephen Colbert merchandise on ParamountShop.com. That's 20% off at checkout on all Late Show shirts, mugs, accessories, and more with code TLS20 at ParamountShop.com.
Welcome, everybody, in here, out there, all the ships at sea. I'm your host, Stephen Colbert. Welcome to The Late Show. Yesterday, President Biden celebrated his 81st birthday. And he posted, sure, why not? He's the President of the United States. He posted a picture of himself with his cake and sweet balls of fire. Blow, Joe, blow for your life. Get out of there. How did the Secret Service let that happen? One person who took the time to mark Biden's birthday was Donald Trump, who chose to celebrate by releasing a letter from his physician that said Trump is in excellent physical and mental health. Well, no, I mean, well, sure. We all know Donald Trump is the picture of health, specifically the before picture. While the doctor claimed Trump's body is humming right along, the letter contained no details to support his claims. Yes. Of course, because doctors rarely go into detail. I'm going to write you a prescription for, wouldn't you like to know? Now, enjoy your mystery pills. They're yellow. Is it lemon? Doctor also praised Trump's recent weight loss, which he credited to improved diet and continued daily physical exercise. So, Ozempic. He's totally on Ozempic. And he's a machine. He's a machine. Elsewhere in Washington last week, Speaker Mike Johnson announced the release of 40,000 hours of January 6th footage. No thanks. If I want to see 40,000 hours of people attacking each other near the Capitol, I'll watch The Real Housewives of the Potomac. Speaker Johnson released the footage because far-right conspiracy theorists believe it will prove that there was nothing to see on January 6th. They've already put out a lot of... I agree. I think we all agree. And they've already put out a lot of misleading spin, with one noting cameras captured demonstrators peacefully marching through the halls of the Capitol while police officers stood by. Well, of course, if you don't count the violent rioting, there was a lot of lovely footage. It was like watching the Zapruder film and saying, wow, the weather was really nice. MAGA Republicans immediately used the footage to bolster their January 6th conspiracy theories. It started with Utah senator and mime being crushed by an invisible armoire. Mike Lee. Last week, Lee retweeted a theory about how this Capitol rioter was really an undercover federal agent because he's holding a badge, like you do when you're undercover. Listen up, I suspect we got a rat in our midst. It's either Jimmy Two Shoes over there or Officer Johnson, badge number 425. It's Jimmy. Kill him. Kill him. Stab with your badge. Stab with your badge. Badge stab. Here's the thing about that badge. Turns out it's not a badge. It's a vape. Cops don't generally flash e-cigs. Unless they're in my new vape-based buddy comedy sitcom, Blue Razz Lemonade and Storm Ice. You have the right to remain alive with flavor. Mike Lee's not the only Republican saying crazy stuff out there. He's joined by a Louisiana representative and guy who just found that plate of chili you left on his seat. Clay Higgins. During a hearing with FBI Director Christopher Wray last week, Higgins, out of the blue, asked this.
Are you familiar with... You know what a ghost vehicle is? Director of the FBI certainly should. You know what a ghost bus is?
A ghost bus?
Ghost bus.
I'm not sure I've used that term.
Oh, I have. when you're newly dead and you miss the train? Who are you gonna call?
Ghostbusters!
Thank you. One rehearsal. One rehearsal. Woo! You're all in the union now. Higgins then explained what he thought a ghost bus was.
It's a vehicle that's used for secret purposes. It's painted over. These two buses in the middle here, they were the first to arrive at Union Station on January 6th, 0500. I have all this evidence. I'm showing you a tip of this iceberg.
Mr. Chairman.
These two buses are painted completely white. These buses are nefarious in nature and were filled with FBI informants dressed as Trump supporters.
It could be. No, it could be. Or, follow me down the rabbit hole here. They were just white buses. There's this thing called Occam's razor, which is what I use to cut my ears off when Clay Higgins speaks. Of course, not everyone's trying to put Trump back in power. We hear a lot of warnings from a large group of anti-Trump radicals. They're called people who have worked with him. The Washington Post recently interviewed 16 former Trump aides, and they all had one message. He shouldn't be president. That's a little bit of a red flag. Pay attention. That's eye-catching. It's like a Hinge profile that says, the funny thing about me is all my exes testified against me at the sentencing. It's honest. One of the loudest critics out there is Trump's former chief of staff, John Kelly, seen here just as the chamomile hits. Kelly recently posed a tough question. What's going on in the country that a single person thinks this guy would still be a good president when he's said the things he's said and done the things he's done? Yes, it's impossible to understand. Some people think he's disgusting. Some people love him. He's like cilantro that wants to put immigrants in camps. Kelly, there you go. Okay, we got there. We got there. Kelly was joined by former White House counsel Ty Cobb, who said this of Trump: he has never cared about America, its citizens, its future, or anything but himself. And you can trust Ty Cobb's judgment, because if you look at him, you can tell he knows who's naughty and who's nice. That's what he actually looks like. He's getting out there. He's getting pretty far out there. Of course, it's almost Thanksgiving. Hope you guys have a happy Thanksgiving. And the holidays come. We try to keep things light on the show, but we also do our best to reflect the national conversation. And in that spirit, we have to address some recent news that speaks to one concrete defining truth, regardless of your background, your political beliefs, or whatever god you pray to. Some bats seem to use their huge junk to have weird sex. Now, here's the thing. Here's the thing. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Steve, huge junk, weird sex? What's all this science mumbo jumbo? This isn't an episode of Nova. So let me break it down for you guys. In a study that came out yesterday, researchers found that some bat species don't have penetrative sex. Oh, my God! This changes something, probably. instead of penetrative sex, these nocturnal hornballs engage in close contact kissing using their large penises like an arm during sex. So they use their penises to check their texts? How did researchers get the data that led to this incredible breakthrough? They received an unsolicited email from a Dutch retiree who had been recording bat sex in a church attic. Amsterdam, Grandpa. Wow. Hey. What's P-Pop doing now that he doesn't work anymore? Oh, he has his hobbies. Moving on. Oh, you know what that means. There's urgent breaking wildcat news. I'm getting word that a cougar was spotted in a public park in Oregon. Oh, my God. a public park in Oregon, that can only mean one thing. Cougars can play hacky sack. Sorry. Sometimes you just like the joke. Sometimes you just like the joke, and I'm sorry. It was unprofessional, but I enjoy the joke. For more, we turn to KGW, Oregon's news leader.
New tonight, a warning in Tigard where there's been a cougar sighting at Cook Park. The city put out the alert tonight telling people to be aware of their surroundings and to keep their dogs on a leash.
Of course, when a cougar's at large, you should also keep your sons on a leash. Now, wait, that other noise means there's an update on our wildcat news, because apparently what everyone in Oregon thought was a cougar has turned out to be a house cat. Cougars are very big. How'd they get that mixed up? One's a cold-hearted killer with no regard for human life, and the other one's a cougar. Now, maybe there's a little bit of a clue. Do we have this? In this actual footage of the creature captured by a brave local citizen, it's a bit grainy and distant. Let's see it again. Jim, enhance! But seriously, how did they think a little kitty cat was a wild cougar?
Psychedelic mushrooms are now legal in Oregon.
Got it. Got it. Okay, I understand. I didn't know that. I didn't know that. That also explains recent sightings of a pool of infinite light and understanding that turned out to be a squirrel. We got a great show for you tonight.
Coming up, Bradley Cooper.
Here's the thing about eating. We all have to do it, sometimes even a few times a day. But if you already have a lot on your plate that isn't food, like stuff to do, figuring out your meals can be stressful. By the time you get breakfast going, it could be lunchtime. And then what? Eat your breakfast for lunch? Is that allowed? Yes, you're a grown-up who can make their own choices. And whether that choice is eating breakfast for every meal or bending to society's construct of proper mealtimes, you can eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals that can be ready in as little as 2 minutes. Tailored to your schedule and weird eating habits, you have the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your cool new breakfast-only lifestyle. You can even try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus, if that's what you're into for breakfast. Or any meal. You do you. Head to factormeals.com/lateshow50 and use code lateshow50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code lateshow50 at factormeals.com/lateshow50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Ladies and gentlemen, my first guest tonight is a talented actor, screenwriter, and director whose new film is Maestro. Please welcome back to The Late Show, Bradley Cooper.
Please.
Thank you. Well, it's good to see you again.
It's always good to see you. It's
always
good to be here.
Nice to have a conversation with you, Bradley Cooper. Woo. You're such an interesting artist and with such an extraordinary range. The last time we were here was, the first time I spoke to you on the show was for A Star Is Born.
That's right.
Again, extraordinary, just stunning movie, and your debut as a director. And you told the story then of Spielberg watching an early cut of A Star Is Born.
Yes.
And he had said, okay, well, you have to direct Maestro. Okay, so how do you wrap your head around introducing for the first time or exploring for an audience who may know his life already and his work, a towering figure like Leonard Bernstein?
Well, the exciting thing was if we went to a coffee shop anywhere, I guarantee you 2% of the people would even know who Leonard Bernstein is.
Yeah.
It's the truth. So this was a very exciting prospect because his music, first of all, he as a person was just fascinating, but his music is nuclear. And I thought if I can make a movie where it could be scored to his music, there's a real possibility for something transcendent. When I was doing A Star Is Born, I always knew if Lady Gaga's voice, it was nuclear. It was just for me to mess up, you know? And I felt that about this movie.
Yes.
I really did. And in researching, because I didn't know what it was going to be about, I knew I didn't want to make a biopic because, like a straightforward, because he's one of the most videoed, photographed musicians of the 20th century.
All through the 50s and the 60s,
yeah,
he was out there explaining classical music and other things.
He kept being on the forefront.
Yes.
He had a television show for 15 seasons called Young People's Concert. Yeah, which is incredible.
Yeah.
So,
like, his Peter and the Wolf is the Peter and the Wolf
that's
you know.
That's right.
Exactly.
And I just fell in love with him, Stephen. I just fell in love with him. And the fact that I got to be him was nuts.
Well, it seems like a lot of people fell in love with him.
Yeah.
Because he loved loving.
He was infectious.
He loved loving, clearly. Like, the enthusiasm that
the people
he...
that I... Sorry to interrupt.
No, you're the guest.
But I would interview all these people, you know, doing research and all, and you know, a lot of people in their 90s, you know, who knew him, and a lot of sort of older women. And the thing that they always said as I was leaving was, well, you know, he was the most beautiful man. And I said, yeah, no. And you're going to play him? And I said, yeah, you know, it's going to be prosthetic. And but they would always, and they had like little photos.
This is nice, but it's no Lenny Bernstein.
Yeah, it's like no Leonard Bernstein. That's right.
Okay. But as an actor, okay, that's a director and to a certain extent a producer and writer, but as an actor, how do you become Leonard Bernstein, or rather, how do you wrap your head around how to be your Leonard Bernstein?
Daunting.
Yes.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
Absolutely terrifying. Because they also described him as when he walked into a room, he just took over. I mean, you just couldn't take your eyes off him. How do you play charisma? I mean, it was just terrifying, Stephen. Mm-hmm. So luckily I had 5.5 years that I could work on it. And he had this incredible voice. He was so melodic, the way he spoke. So I worked with this incredible dialect coach, Tim Monick, and we spent 5 years. I started working on it before Stars Born came out. And he lived basically at my house, this dialect coach, and we worked 5 days a week, 8 hours a day, and we just broke it down because his voice always also changed throughout the course of his life. And this movie takes place, it's about his relationship, which we will get to Carey Mulligan, who's incredible in the movie.
Yes.
It's about a relationship of marriage. And his voice changed. His voice changed. He was a heavy smoker, started smoking when he was 13.
There is barely a frame in this movie that Leonard Bernstein is not smoking.
That's right,
It wasn't just this had a very singular kind of placed voice with the way he spoke, but he also seemed to always have the word he needed. And they were never at a loss for words.
Never.
And such penetrating insight on anything that fell under his purview, which was the world of music.
Yes.
And did you find yourself in your own life having more facility than you normally would because you were playing a paragon?
That's such a great question. The answer is
what I do,
least...
baby.
In my mind, yes. In my mind, I was ridiculously eloquent. But I did. I was like, I've gotten very smart.
Okay, I have a question. You heard me talking out here about your movie, and I mean everything I said. Everybody should go see it. It's quite unique and very beautiful, and it reaches into your chest and does this magical thing that music does, which is it changes you from a distance. And that's it itself is a piece of music itself. It's like a very
that's
tight
right.
little concerto with movements in it.
That's right.
And a beautiful coda at the end
that's
with
right.
Felicia.
Yes.
Where does this artistic ambition come from? Has it always been there? Has it always been someday they'll all see, or did it grow, or did it grow as you grew?
I think that the confidence to dream grew. I think when I was a kid, kids would make fun of me because I knew what I wanted to do when I was like 11. And that was really an asset to be so focused, but it was just acting. But the truth is it was filmmaking, but I don't think I allowed myself the courage to dream that big. But when I first started acting 25 years ago professionally, right away I knew that this is what I want to do. And it was just about having the opportunity and taking the leap of faith. I mean, but I have to say, I've never made something fearlessly. And I think I know it's because Lenny was with me when I was making it. I feel like time has bent. I can't believe I didn't know him. I felt like, I feel like I knew him. He died in 1990.
It's extraordinary how you can love the people you've never met.
Yeah, it really is. But he gave me the courage to like you said, cinematically attack this movie with utter fearlessness.
Well, one of the things that is remarkable, I saw it with my wife, Evie, and she said, 5 minutes in, I no longer saw Bradley Cooper. You look so much like Leonard Bernstein. This is sort of the older Bernstein and the older you. This is an example of that look. And it's really hard to tell those two gentlemen apart right there. How long did this take?
So that look, for Kazuhiro, the most incredible makeup artist I worked with for years, 4.5 years. And we just kept testing it. He has an insane work. We're both sick. We both have this crazy work ethic. So it was like a marriage made in heaven.
We have to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with more Bradley Cooper, everybody. Stick around.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. We're back with the writer, director, and star of Maestro. It's Bradley Cooper. I loved how you embodied Bernstein's physicality, not just his look and his sound, but from the back, especially when you're leading a choir through, like, the Laudate. It's him. The physicality is extraordinary. Tell me about working through that so you're embodying him from head to toe.
Again, I had years to do it, and he's so photographed and videoed. So early on, I came across, which you can see on YouTube, this Mahler 2, Mahler's Second Symphony, The Resurrection, which to me is arguably the best piece of music ever composed. And there's a video of him doing in this cathedral outside of London in the 70s. And I was like, we got to do that. That's going to be when you see the shark in the movie. And it's the only real piece in the movie where you see him conduct, and it's 6 minutes and 20 seconds. Imagine that, like, you know, there's going to be a moment in the movie where we're just going to watch a guy conduct classical music for 6 minutes.
And you worked on that for how long?
I worked on it for 6 years. And because it's impossible to conduct. I've always been in love with conducting as a kid, fake conducting as a kid, from, like, Tom and Jerry and Bugs Bunny. but, like, loved it too much, like asked Santa Claus for a baton, spent hundreds of hours conducting in my room. No, it's okay. It was all right. Thank you, though. And it served me. It served me for here. And then I worked with Yannick Seguin, who's the music director of the Philadelphia Orchestra. Yeah, he's incredible. And Gustavo Dudamel, who's the music director of the LA Phil. I spent years with them. And the New York Phil opened their doors. I would put Lee to bed and go there 3 or 4 nights a week and watch. It was heaven, Stephen. But I learned how to do it to a degree that I could then at least conduct those 6 minutes in front of, that's live when you see in the movie. We're there in the cathedral. That's the London Symphony Orchestra. They're all unicorns. You're talking about maybe the top 3 orchestras in the world. And they've all been doing it since they're 4 years old. I remember, like, the concertmaster in the middle, he's showing me a picture when he's 4 with 2 wooden spoons. He's like, that's when I first started playing the violin. I was like, oh, my God. It was just incredible.
Well, and here we go, Jim.
Crazy.
I can't imagine the high that must
that
have been.
Crazy. That was crazy.
To do that.
Yeah, that was that.
Now I want to see another movie where Leonard Bernstein has to fight Lydia Tarr.
There you go.
I can't let you go without talking about your co-star, Carey Mulligan.
Yes.
And her performance is so extraordinarily beautiful, and your love for each other. Yeah. For Lenny and Felicia is so extraordinary. The movie is a love story of many kinds, but this love story is at the heart of it between the two of them. It's extraordinary, a complex relationship. It has its ups and downs to it, but it ultimately it's an act of total love all the way to the end.
Yes.
And tell me about how you worked on your characters with each other. Tell me about what that character Felicia meant to Lenny Bernstein.
I mean, that was the reason I wanted to make the movie, was discovering this, unearthing this incredibly dynamic, difficult, haunting, funny, hilarious, inspiring marriage that they had. And early on, I was looking at photographs, and I just kept thinking, Carey Mulligan. And she happened to be doing a one-woman show in the West Village. I went to see it, And I felt like divine intervention at so many points in this film. She comes out on stage, there's a key light on her. She happened to have blonde hair at the time. Felicia had blonde hair much of her mid-40s. And it was like Felicia was right there. And I asked her 4.5 years ago to do it. I hadn't written the script yet. And she said, yes, I'm willing to go on this road with you. And we just worked. We worked, Stephen. And she worked with Tim Monach. She just did everything. I've never been with an actor that has been so committed. And we just, once we arrived on set, we really were just, it didn't feel like acting. It felt like we were just channeling these people. So it was so thrilling. I mean, I'll never have an experience like this.
I probably won't have time to continue this conversation with you because they've been trying to wrap me
up
for the last 5 minutes over there. But I just have to ask you about one thing.
Yeah.
And it's one thing, and it's actually many things. And I think there's an extraordinary generosity as a director in this about how you will, say, in that case, when you're in the theater for the first time together, and you land the camera on her, talking to Leonard Bernstein, who was charming and magnetic and a gravity well of his own, but the camera stays on her the whole time. And that happens multiple times in the film. We just stay on one person. As a director, there must be some temptation to cut between people, but you just let us love the people, a single person as they're revealing themselves. And I'm curious whether that was a discovery when you're editing, or was it a plan going in?
That was absolutely planned. There's like nothing on the cutting room floor within the scenes. That was it. And it was because I wanted to show his impact on people. That was part of it. You know, that's why when he introduces her to David Oppenheim, who Matt Bomer plays, who's incredible, you don't even see Lenny. And he says, oh, that was that insensitive of me? And you're just in these huge close-ups in that 1:3:3 aspect ratio, that there's a specific aspect ratio where close-ups are so beautiful in this film. And so, you know, that was all part of the design. And again, I had so much prep that I really knew how I wanted to tell the story. And it's musical. You know, that's why cutting changes things. It's a different rhythm.
Yes.
And so everything was musical. As you said, then we go to the pauses. There's moments in the movie where there's just nothing, and you're just sitting there with somebody.
And then if you hold it there, the performer establishes the rhythm.
That's right.
You know.
Oh, and
they are playing the instrument, the camera playing them.
She was an incredible musician in this movie. There's no way I could have. I mean, there's a fight that they have in Thanksgiving during their Thanksgiving parade, and it's one shot from the distance, and Carrie is just playing music so beautifully in that scene with the melody of her voice and her acting.
Now, another aspect that I loved the sort of catching the giants of the 20th century who kind of come and go throughout this story.
Yes.
That the fact that I was talking to Evan, and he went, oh, that's Aaron Copland. He called him Aaron. That's Aaron Copland. That's Jerome Robbins.
That's right.
I didn't know that Leonard Bernstein had a relationship with Aaron Cohen.
So Aaron Copland was Bernstein's best friend, arguably. They knew each other when he was in his 20s. He lived on his couch. He met him at a play. He was sitting next to him. He was a huge fan of Copeland. They became dear friends all the way through till they were older gentlemen. And my best friend since I'm 10 years old is Brian Klugman. And I asked Brian Klugman, because you do anything you do not to act. I said, you got to play Aaron Copeland. So he's Aaron Copeland in the movie. And he was wonderful. Yeah.
And the two of you.
Yeah, that was amazing.
It was amazing. Yeah. Well, we got to go here, but Thanksgiving is Thursday. What do you have planned?
Yeah, we're going to go to Jersey, and then we're going to go to Fairfield, Connecticut to spend it with the Bernsteins, which will be amazing. The children.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, and we shot in that house. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, Bradley, maestro, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert. Just one more thing. If you want to see more of me, come to The Late Show YouTube channel for more clips and exclusives.
Rise and shine, football fans. Start your day the right way with Morning Footy, a podcast that covers every aspect of the global game, headlines, match previews, analysis, interviews, culture, fashion, and plenty of banter. Join as we track the thrills and spills of Europe's biggest title races, the business end of the Champions League season, a summer packed with international competitions, MLS, NWSL, and much more. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town. Then they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me? You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown. New season streaming June 2nd. Exclusively on Paramount+.